Okay, let's begin. Okay, let's begin. You can hear me? Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay. I want to discuss today a topic, the topic of roiv, the topic of ruboi kikuloi. How is this sugya relevant to this week's parsha? The answer is, in this week's parsha, we learn about the nazir. When the Nazir concludes his term of Nazirus, he has an obligation to shave off all of his hair, to cut off all of his hair. What happens if the Nazir cuts off all of his hair with the exception of two hairs? Doesn't do a perfect job. He leaves over two sa'aras. So the halacha is, he's not yoytzei. He's not yoytzei. He has not fulfilled the mitzvah. The gilach is called sa'aroi. The nazir has an obligation. And by the way, this I'm referring specifically to the point where he becomes tameh. If the nazir comes in contact with the dead, he has to shave off his hair and start all over again. The gilach is called sa'aroi. If he becomes tameh, he has to cut off his hair and start again. He has to first become tahar. The paraduma water, he needs them to sprinkle upon him the paraduma water on day three, day seven, and on day seven he shaves off his hair and starts all over again. The Gemara has a question: what happens if he does not cut off all of his hair? Is he permitted to resume and to start counting a new term of Nazirus? And the Gemara says no, he must cut off every single hair. Why? The Gemara has a havamina. Roiv, if he cut off the majority of his hair, that should be sufficient. And the Gemara says you are correct. Me'ikar hadin ruboi is kikuloi. However, there's a special gezeres hakosav by a nazir where it says bayoyim hashevi'i yigalechenu, and the word yigalechenu is superfluous because the pasuk already mentioned that it should be cut off. And the Gemara, whatever the exact details of the drasha, I do not know, but the Gemara makes a drasha, a special drasha, based upon these words, that the case of Nazir is the exception to the rule. There is no din of ruboi kikuloi. He must cut off every last hair. And that indicates that generally we do apply a principle of roif would be sufficient. So this opens up a big topic of discussion of roif. All over the Torah, we come in contact with different ideas, different situations where we want to get away with roiv. It's almost impossible in this world to have perfection. Everything should be the same. There's always the need at some point in time to follow the majority in every single situation. So here I have this wonderful sefer from Rabbi. We use this term all the time, Rabbi Dvorkis. Okay, his term on the parasha, and he has a fantastic discussion here of the lumdis of roif. So let's go through a couple of examples. I'm gonna jump around. Let's talk about the topic, which is very dear to my heart, the topic of a bezdin, a sanhedrin. Now, a bezdin, we know that a bezdin, if there's a matter, a halachic inyan, there is a situation where bezdin must make a decision. We have a situation where bezdin must come make a decision about a certain halachic topic. It says in the pasuk, acharei rabim lahatris. We have a principle. And bezdin takes a vote. Let's say it's a question of a person deserves to die. A person has committed an avera. Did he do this chayiv misa? And there are 71 dayanim. They have to take a vote. If the majority of the bezdin, 51% of the bezdin, says he's guilty, he's put to death. If the majority of the bezdin says that he's innocent, he's not put to death. If we have a bezdin of 21 dayanim, same 23 dayanim, 23 dayanim is also sufficient for Mitzvah Spezdin, okay? It's also sufficient for Mitzvah Spezdin, 23 Dayanim, we follow the majority. Now the problem is, but wait a minute, if the Torah demands, we have a special drasha that tells us that we need 23 23 dayonim to decide if a person is chayiv nisa, or to decide a halacha. Is this action permitted on Shabbos, not permitted on Shabbos? If we only have a majority, let's say we have a super majority, we have 20 dayonim that say he's chayiv nisa, and 3 dayonim decide he's not chayiv nisa, how can we put the person to death? We don't have a full Beis Din. We don't have a full Beis Din. So the answer is the pasuk says that we follow the majority. We have a pasuk in the Torah. The pasuk is Achrei Ram Lahatis. The pasuk tells you follow the majority. What exactly does that mean? What does it mean? What is the lundis of the Torah's instruction, Acharei Rabim Lahatos? Mr. Zalun, I think for some reason, no, he goes, someone keeps him unmuting themselves. What are you doing, Ms. Plotnik? You're giving us the birds. I did it to you. I muted you. I got you. I knocked you out. Question is, what is the purpose? What is the purpose? What exactly is the lumnus when the Torah tells us, Acharei Rabim Lahatos? Let me present you the two sides of the dilemma. Maybe with the Torah, and this has many practical nafkaminas in halacha. When the Torah tells, let's talk about our example. We have a person who is on trial. The question is it chayav misa? Bezin comes out, they deliberate for weeks, and they come out lemaskana, 20 of the dayanim have voiced their opinion that this individual is chayav misa. 3 dayanim have voiced their opinion that no, he's not chayav misa, he's an innocent man. And they refuse to budge. They refuse to see eye to eye with their colleagues, the other 20 dayanim. And they think you all 20 of you are making a big mistake. The Torah says, go ahead and execute this man. Put this man to death. What is the lumdis of that execution? Is it the pshat that the roiv, the 20 dayanim, their power is so great, it automatically swallows up the other 3 dissenters? So when the Bezin makes a decision and says, yes, we're going to execute you, 23 dayanim are executing a human being. What do you mean? But there are 3 dayanim that disagree. We don't care what you think. We need your bodies. We have here a court, and the Torah wants the court to have 23 physical human beings, bodies. The decision will follow the mind of the majority. If we have a majority, this is wonderful, but we don't actually, but the decision is, the majority is so powerful that it automatically, we consider at least virtually as if the other 3 dayanim who disagree, it's as if they don't disagree. And when the person is being put to death, he's being put to death by 23 members of the Beis Din. Is that the pshat? Or maybe not. If 3 people disagree and hold that this man is innocent, he does not deserve to die, and the Beis Din proceeds according to halacha and puts him to death, only 20 people are really putting him to death. The other 3 people are not. The other 3 people are mechutz l'machaneh. They're not responsible. They have no part in this. The Torah gave 20 members of the Beis Din permission to put someone to death. Since you started out as 23, and there was a debate, and 20 of you have come to the conclusion is chayiv misa, 3 people refuse to accept that approach. Okay, 20 people are now permitted to proceed to execute this individual. The other 3 dayanim have absolutely no part in his execution. Those are the 2 tzadim. Now, if you just take this at face value, if we would say these are the 2 tzadim, if we would accept this to be correct, this dilemma, let's say ultimately, at the end of the day, Bezin realizes they made a mistake. they realized, let's say a year later, that there was something faulty in their decision. And indeed, they made a terrible mistake. They put to death an innocent man. Do the three Dayanim who disagreed with the Beis Din, are they guilty? Do they need to do teshuva? Do they need to go to Ori Miklat? I mean, I don't know how it all works. Is this even possible to Ori Miklat? I don't think there is Ori Miklat when it comes to making a mistake in this. But do they need to do teshuva? Do they bear any guilt in the error of putting an innocent man to death? It depends. If you learn like the first tzad of the Chakira, that when you have that the Torah demands to be 23 Dayanim who decide if a man is chayiv misa, if the majority decide that he's guilty, then what happens is, the lumdus is, the majority swallows up the minority, and now together, 23 judges together are putting a man to death. It may very well be that three of those judges disagreed with the decision, but it's too bad for them. They're part of the group. If you have accepted upon yourself to be part of the Sanhedrin, and the rules of the Sanhedrin are such that if there is a majority, then a decision is handed down, and the decision is implemented, you are part of that implementation of a decision, even if you disagree, because you are part of the court. And the rules of Acharei Rabim Lahatos mean the majority opinion has influence over you to the degree where you're also part of that decision, whether you like it or not. And if a man now is put to death, it means on record he was put to death by 23 people, including you, and therefore you have to do teshuva for putting to death an innocent man. But if we say that the rules of Roiv mean, you have a question, you have a dilemma, you have a majority. So the majority, the Torah says, if 20 Dayanim decide he's guilty, so it's those 20 Dayanim who now have permission to put this man to death, and the other three Dayanim have absolutely nothing to do with this. And thus, if a year later they come to the realization that they made a mistake and they put an innocent man to death, the three Dayanim who disagreed can say to the other 20 Dayanim, you see, we told you so, ha ha ha, we told you so, you don't know what you're doing, therefore you now have to go and bear the consequences of what has happened, and we have absolutely nothing to do with this. So the truth is, the Rebbe Chiddush comes from the tomb. I once told this to someone, he didn't believe me, and I was trying to figure out who I had this argument with so I can come back and show them this, the Tumim. It's the Tumim. Tumim is one of the Rishonim. And the Tumim writes a shocking thing. When Beis Din has a dilemma in court and they have to decide and there's the minority, the minority has to change their decision at the end. They have to declare, being that 20 Dayanim here have decided this man is guilty, we disagree. We really, to us, it doesn't make any sense, but we're the minority. And thus, we hereby declare in front of the whole world to hear that we are mevatel our das. We cancel our knowledge. It must be that we are mistaken. And we hereby accept upon ourselves to recognize that the MS is this man is chayiv misa. The minority has to accept the opinion of the majority to the degree where they have to publicly say we are mivatel, we cancel our opinion, and we come to realize that they are right because they're the majority. And when the Torah says acharei rabim lehatois, it means the minority has to cancel their opinion, train themselves, force themselves to acknowledge that their thinking is faulty, is incorrect, and accept the majority opinion. That's an awesome chiddush. That not only does that follow the tzad, the first approach, the first level, we have a dilemma, the two different stadim, it goes even to a greater extreme, by demanding of the minority to cancel their approach and accept the approach of the majority. And by the way, I don't remember the details. This is mamash of a lahavdil ben hakodesh l'chol. I don't remember the details, but in the state of Israel, there were certain decisions that were made by the cabinet in the establishment of the state of Israel, where there was a disagreement, or even a disagreement going to war. I don't remember all the details, and all I remember is that there was a dispute, and it was not unanimous, but the custom in the Knesset or amongst the cabinet members was when they took the vote, the final vote, they first took a preliminary vote and there was a majority. And then the custom was the people who were in the minority had to change their mind. And on record, everyone had to vote unanimously one decision. On record, everyone had to vote one way. It had to be, that was the custom, had to be unanimous. Even though it doesn't have to be unanimous, it can be the way they set up their system was it can be majority. And when you read about this story, I'm sure maybe someone of the mayor probably, he's our fact checker, can probably start researching something about the vote, how they voted in the cabinet in the early days of the establishment of the state of Israel regarding some very important decisions, whether it was to declare a state, I don't know, maybe it was to declare to go to war, one of the early wars, whether it was something else that's very, very critical, where they had to change their minds. So I was thinking to myself, it was the Pintle Yid, even our religious people, but it was the Pintle Yid in them that understood that in Beis Din, in the Sanhedrin HaGadol, the Tumim says, when there is a disagreement among the Dayanim, what to do, if 23 Dayanim are deliberating, should we put this person to death? And let's say, for example, 20 of them say, yes, he deserves a death penalty, and 3 Dayanim say he does not deserve the death penalty. When they finally take the final vote, the final official vote, all of the Dayanim have to paskin, he's chayiv misa.
Rabbi, isn't there a lashon, I think, amiyat kamisha einoy, something like that?
Okay, we'll discuss some of that in one moment. There are many different, the rules of roiv and the miyot are very broad. In every sugya and shas, it has a different set of rules. I want to try to bring a couple of ideas. And the first idea about roiv and the miyot, I want to bring out, I think this is the most extreme example. This is by far the most extreme principle, what the Tumim says about roiv and miyot. It's an incredible, incredible chiddush, what the Tumim says. And that is when dayanim decide a halacha, there will always be a disagreement. That is human nature. If you say chayiv, automatically I will say pater. That's just the way life goes. Life goes, there people have a tendency to disagree. Yet, the Tumim is mechadish, an awesome, awesome chiddush, that when it says in the pasuk, acherei rabim lehatois, it doesn't mean like the second side of the dilemma that I presented in the beginning of the shiur, where, oh, we have 20 dayanim, so let the 20 dayanim go off on their own. They will go off on their own and they will kill this person, and the other 3 dayanim are going to be michutz lamachne. No, that's not the pshat. So what's the other pshat? The other 3 dayanim disagree. We strongly disagree, but being that we are part of the Beis Din, the way the rules are, the work are, a full, complete Beis Din of 23 dayanim hands down a decision, even though within the group, 20 favor this decision and 3 disagree. No, it's not even that. According to the Tumim, Acharei Rabim Lahatois is an instruction to the 3 dayanim in our example. They are being told by the Torah's talk, it's not telling us the decision of the Beis Din. The Torah is speaking to the three Dayanim who disagree and is demanding of them, you three Dayanim who disagree with the majority, you are now required by the Torah to change your mind. Humble yourself. Acknowledge that your thoughts, your thought process is faulty. You have an idea, your logic is not correct. The other 20 Dayanim, their approach to this matter, their logic, that is the correct approach. And we demand from you to change your minds. Convince yourself that you are wrong and the majority is correct. The instruction of Acharei Rabim Lehatois is not the way most of us translate the words. You have to ask always the question when you read a pasuk in the Torah, when you read an expression, who is the subject? Mi omar el mi? The Torah, Acharei Rabim Lehatois. Oh, that means we follow the majority opinion. The subject is the plaintiff, the defendant. The defendant does not know what his outcome will be. So Acharei Rabim, after the majority, Lehatois, will we turn your fate? You, the defendant, the plaintiff, the person who has come to court, after the majority decision, will your outcome be? The determination of what will be for you will depend upon the majority. That's not the pshat in the pasuk according to the Sefer HaTumim. He says, Lahatois, Amichol, want to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to make 2 points. One is that there are certain decisions that at least have to have a show of unanimity for the sake of the institution, whether it's a Beis Din, whether it's a cabinet, and so on. So that is one reason. Another reason in the case we're working with here is that then judges might want to take the risk of voting for conviction, because you know the ones who vote not guilty, then they face no liability in case of error. So but the judges who vote guilty, they face a potential liability. So they all have to be in it together.
Okay, that's a different idea. First of all, liability, there's something called malpractice insurance.
Well, you brought up the idea that if it was found to be an error, you know,
correct.
And that's what triggered that idea.
Okay, but
the idea is for the institution's sake.
The institution has to take, in life, there's always risks. This whole problem with Corona is everyone has to have no liability. Liability, that's the key, that's the name of the game. So we have to be 100% free from liability. The problem is that in life, there's no such thing as 100%. Most institutions, if there's a 1% chance that someone will get sick, that's it. That's it, the institution has to shut down. No matter what the cost, no matter what the consequences are, because we don't want any liability, and 1% is enough for us to shut down. I don't know, maybe they're right. Maybe when it comes to matters of life and death, they're right. But the truth is, in life, there's no such thing as 100%. When you cross the street, there's no guarantee that the traffic light is not gonna malfunction. There is.
That's a liberal idea that society has to protect you from any form of offense or harm or anything, which is obviously not true and unreal.
Everyone goes through a green light on a traffic. What every traffic light works perfectly correct. It never happened that you have a traffic light that it's green both ways. It's green going this way and it's green going this way. And what does that result in? Rahman al-Islam, that could result in a tragedy. Okay, if it's green, going both ways. So is it a guarantee 100% of the time that every single traffic light in New York City is going to work perfectly correctly? There's no guarantee. It has happened. I saw my own eyes. It was crazy. Right near Tar Vadas, it was like the most bizarre thing. The traffic light malfunctioned and it was green both ways. Could you imagine such a thing? Could you imagine? I thought that they built into the circuits that it should be impossible for that to happen. I think they do. I think they're supposed to do that, that it should actually be impossible. But it happened. How in the world did it happen? Obviously, someone made a big mistake. When there was a malfunction, there's no guarantee for nothing. Bezdin liability is a separate issue. In the Supreme Court of the United States of America, you will always see when they hand down a major decision, there is the majority decision, and then there is the dissenting opinion. And the dissenting opinion is a minority, and either one justice will write a paper, and he'll on his own, and another one will write a dissenting opinion. Sometimes they will appoint one person to write the dissenting opinion that represents all of those who dissent. But in the way it works, the United States of America is that when the Supreme Court or any court hands down a decision, there is a majority. There is a majority. You follow the majority. The law will follow the majority. But those who disagree, dissent, on the record, it's clear this was not my decision. I disagree. Not only do I disagree, I present you with a paper presenting the lumdus, the logic, the arguments, the proof that I have that this decision is incorrect. I do not agree to the decision of the court. So at the end of the day, in the United States of America, when a law is handed down by the Supreme Court, who is handing down the law? The majority. And the minority, they're not part of the decision. It's clear as day. That's the way the government, the constitution is set up. In Yadus, it's not like that. At least not according to the Tumim. When a person, ad kidei kach, according to the Tumim, when there's a majority opinion, the minority, they're not allowed to dissent. They are required to say, listen, if my colleagues here disagree with me, and they understand the matter differently, and the majority of the members of the court feel that way, you know something? It must be there's something wrong with me. It must be there's something wrong with my mind. My mind is tainted. My Torah knowledge is distorted. And therefore, I have to go back to yeshiva for a couple of days and learn Bahasma de Rabba and do teshuva in order to sharpen my mind and come to the realization that my thinking, my logic is faulty. And I have to come around and accept that the logic, the arguments of my colleagues is correct. And now we will all vote together, ki ish echad b'lev echad, one decision. And Rebbe Chol, you're right. They'll all be liable, 100%. If the day comes when there was a big mistake, so that's right, they'll all be liable, too bad for them. Why wasn't this person successful enough in convincing everyone else that he was right? That's not the issue. Liability is not the issue. That's a later. Let's discuss what the decision is. That is an incredible insight into Roif. Acharei Rabim Lahatois is an instruction to the minority members of the court to change their mind and accept the arguments and the logic, the thinking of the majority minds of the court, to recognize they are speaking words of MS, of truth, and to acknowledge it and to train yourself to accept that to be correct. And then the court hands down one decision. All 23 members of the court are on the same page. That is unprecedented in any court of law, probably in the entire world. Certainly not in the United States. And I remember, I remember listening to the lectures by Stephen Przanski, when I used to listen to his lectures on the history of the state of Israel. And he and I was blown away when he mentioned that in the cabinet of the prime minister, whoever it was, probably Ben Gurion, I would imagine, Golda Meir maybe, in the early years when there was some very important...
No, it still exists. You just mentioned the word cabinet. when there's a decision that has to be made in the Knesset, and the prime minister and his cabinet said, and you're a member of the cabinet, and you're, let's say, a Degel HaTorah, and they decide there's going to be, call it a homosexuality, you have no right to vote against the government. Otherwise, they kick you out of the party.
You have to vote.
You have to vote for the coalition positively. Lately, they got the idea they walk out and they're not there when they have to vote. But you can never vote against your coalition party. That's the rule.
That's not the way it is in other countries. Last night, you saw the Secretary of Defense come out publicly against Trump. He's a member of the cabinet. Trump wants to invoke a law. He wants to invoke a law. I don't know. I'm not familiar with all the terms.
So if they can't convince Trump, they should resign.
Exactly. So he's pretty obviously setting himself up to be fired. I'm surprised he wasn't already fired. But in the United States, he's a member of the cabinet. He obviously disagrees with Trump. Trump wants to invoke a law that will call all of the states to call up the National Guard, and that's Trump's. It's subject to debate. It's all subject to debate, and it is a cabinet. And obviously, I mean, I don't know all the details of who makes the final decision. If you have a majority, not a majority. Trump, the president of the United States, he wants to interpret the law, interpret something in his understanding. And probably the most important member of his cabinet, the Secretary of Defense, gets up publicly and says, I disagree. It may be that he has more power and he will override my decision, but I'm telling you, I disagree. This is unacceptable in Yados. In Yados, when the Torah says, Acharei Rabim Lahatois, the power that makes the decision, which in this case is the majority, forces the minority to wake up and to acknowledge that your thought process, your thinking is invalid. And you now have an obligation to go back to yeshiva and sit and learn the whole day, the whole night, in order to refine, to perfect, and to purify your faulty thoughts, to acknowledge that the decision of the majority is the correct decision, and to come back and to vote, I agree with the decision of the president. This is something that is very unique in the Torah, at least according to the Tumim, and opens up a whole new world of understanding of what it means, Acharei Rabim Lahatois. When you have a rov, in this principle in Beis Din, the rov is not just, you have a majority and a minority, and we follow the majority. And it's not even the next level where you have a majority and a minority. The minority is all part of the majority, and even though they dissent, but they're also necessary to be present in order to carry out a decision. Mayor, he mentioned, let's say they want to abstain. They don't want to vote. No, everyone agrees that cannot be. They must be present. When Beis Din executes a human being based upon a decision, all 23 Dayanim must be present when the decision is handed down. According to the Tumim, at the end of the day, all 23 Dayanim must say guilty. According to those who disagree with the Tumim, they do not need all to say guilty. 20 can say guilty, 3 can say innocent, but they all must be present. No one is allowed to walk out. No one is allowed to say present and just not comment. It doesn't work like that. You need 23 decisions. 20 say guilty, 3 say innocent. There are 23 bodies. It is a decision that is coming forward from a group of 23. It happens to be 3 disagree and 20 agree. We're going to follow the majority opinion. That is one approach. Acharei Rabim Lahatois. But there's even a bigger chiddush. Acharei Rabim Lahatois. And that is, we're not going to accept any dissenting opinion. After we can deliberate this issue for years or months, whatever you want to deliberate it, if we can't convince the 3 people are right, they have to train themselves to acknowledge that the other 20 people are correct. And when we take the final vote, it's going to be 23 people deciding guilty. Now, I know you think you know that if a Bezdin decides, a member of the Bezdin says guilty, then the person is free. That only means in the initial, in the final psak, a nega, a person is nega tzarat, nega spreads to the entire body. If the nega spreads to the entire body, then the person is tahar. And likewise, if all 23 dayanim paskin, that a person is guilty, he goes free because he does not have a fair trial. If everyone immediately says guilty, 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 there's no free trial. There's no argument. There's no discussion. Everyone's mind is tainted. There has to be a dissenting opinion at least to engage in dialogue, to engage in debate. But at the end of the debate, according to the Tumim, they almost come around to acknowledge that the person, they almost agree to one decision. Okay, that is one idea in the sugya of Roiv, to see how far Roiv goes. Roiv doesn't just go, we take the majority and that's enough. Mr. Platt.
What's the difference between this and food? What is the difference between this and food? Basar b'chalav. And the other thing, the mi'ut is not there, but tell the whole.
That's the best machlokes rishonim.
See, why shouldn't it be this way in betting also? It's a batel. Ha-mi'ut batel.
You say it's very important because Bezdin, when it comes to, let's bring on Mr. Rabbi Shloni's point. You have food, and in the food you have ingredients. And one of the ingredients, a portion of the food is not kosher. And it's, you can't taste it. If you can taste it, that's a different story. You cannot discern, you cannot taste the non-kosher food. The question is, what is the status of that non-kosher ingredient? Do we say it becomes kosher? If the majority of the food is kosher, kosher ingredient, it's magic. It becomes kosher. Or do we say no? The kosher is kosher. The non-kosher remains non-kosher. The point is, you're allowed to eat non-kosher. Is it the pshat that you're eating only kosher because of bittul b'roiv, or no? You're eating kosher and you're eating non-kosher, but this is a situation where we permit you to eat non-kosher. Let me give you the example to illustrate a nafkamina and this machlekes rishayin. Classic, you learn your day, the smicha, this is a classic example. When you have three pieces of meat in front of you, I have in front of me three pieces of meat, A, B, and C. We know for a fact that two are kosher and one is not kosher, but they're separate. They're not mixed together. They're separate. What is the law? The law is bittul. Bittul b'roiv. One piece becomes bottle in the two pieces. Now here's the question. Am I allowed to eat all three pieces in one shot? Or I'm allowed to eat all three pieces, but not in one setting, not in one meal. I can eat one piece of meat for breakfast, one for lunch, and one for dinner. At every given moment of time, I can say the piece of meat that I'm eating is bottle b'roiv. It's bottle. So I'm allowed. But being bottle does not mean that it's kosher. It just means there's one piece of meat that's not kosher. Two pieces are kosher. At any given moment in time, the laws of bittul tell me that even if it is not kosher, you're allowed to eat it because it's bottle. But that logic only goes so far. You only can do so if at any moment in time, the possibility still exists that what you are eating is kosher. But if you're going to have in front of you all three pieces of meat and eat them all in one shot, you are definitely eating non-kosher. But if you learn that the pshat of bittul is that the bittul automatically transforms something that's not kosher into kosher, then even if you have in front of you all three pieces of meat in one shot, you can eat them all in one shot. You can eat all three pieces of meat because the power of bittul is so strong, it transforms something which is not kosher into kosher. Even if you're willing to say such a svara, who says you can say such a svara when it comes to judges? Because meat doesn't have a mind. Meat is an object. But when it comes to a courtroom where there are judges, each judge has his own mind. Who says there's such a thing that the mind of one judge has to conform and give himself over to the opinion of another judge? Maybe when it comes to meat, the rules of Bittul Meruv teach us that the miut, the minority, is transformed into kosher meat. If two pieces are kosher and one piece is not kosher, and the Torah tells us that we follow the majority, that means that the non-kosher meat becomes kosher. You know why? Because the non-kosher meat is just an object. It's just an object. So it has no mind of its own. The laws of Bittul, the Torah presents such rules that anyway, kosher, not kosher, is Hashem decided what's kosher, what's not kosher. The same one that decided what's kosher, what's not kosher, also told us that there's something called Bittul Meruv, and something that's not kosher, that's mixed with kosher, it becomes kosher. But to go to such a degree and say such a svar when it comes to a courtroom, and you're dealing with human beings, and each human being has his own opinion on a matter, who says you can go so far to say such a thing? That's going to an extreme. Along comes the Tumim, and he says, that's right. It doesn't happen automatically, but there is a duty upon the members of the minority of the court to go back to yeshiva. They'll have to adjourn for a period of time and send them the opinion back into the court, back to yeshiva, to learn Torah in order to purify his mind, to come around and to understand that his decision is incorrect. Okay, in the secular world, no such thing like this exists. There's always a dissenting opinion. But at least, you know, at least there is Musar to learn from the secular world. And the Musar is, in the secular court system, yeah, as in the Supreme Court, there's a majority opinion. And the majority of opinion is the law. Unfortunately, I've seen too many times in the Jewish world where there's an organization that is set up with a group of people who supposedly vote on issues that affect the people that are members of that organization, and there's always disagreement, and the disagreement remains a disagreement. And when the organization is pressed to issue a policy, they say, we don't have a policy. You know why? Because the leaders of our organization who have given the job and the duty, the obligation to reach a conclusion, to set one policy for our organization, they disagree and they don't want to vote. They don't want to vote. That's a horrible thing. If you have an organization, let's say, has 10 members and they have to issue a policy. I can give you a lot of examples, which I'm not, because a lot of it is Lashon Hara and just makes more machlekes. There are a lot of big issues today in Klal Yisrael, and every segment of society, do whatever you want. But if you are an organization that represents the members of people looking for guidance, and you have many members in your many leaders, and you want to give one clear decision, take a vote. Take a vote. And the majority opinion, this is the policy of this organization. If you don't like it, so don't be a paying member. Go to the other organization, follow there. But our organization, is here to lead. And life is difficult. Trump, there's one milo about Trump that I like very much. Trump, he says over and over, Corona is a war. It's a war. We're at war. When you're at war, you have to make difficult decisions. When you're not at war, you're right, and you're right. We're going to satisfy this guy. If there's a 1% chance someone's going to get hurt, so we're going to take into consideration liability, and we have to deal with this situation. When you're in war, you send out an army to a battle. And you know good and well that not every soldier is going to come back. People are going to die on the battlefield. And sometimes a lot of people are going to die on the battlefield. So why then is the general making a decision to give up lives for the greater good? Because when you're at war, the goal is to win the war. And winning a war comes with sacrifice. And Trump, he said this many times, and it's something which I think many people don't understand. He says, I'm making decisions, and you don't like my decisions, but I'm not making my decisions as a leader in peaceful times. When you're a leader of the free world in peaceful times, yeah, you got to satisfy this politician. You got to smear this guy. You have to sign the bill. So he wants a couple of $1 million to go build the bridge, to go nowhere. And he wants money for guns. And he wants money to go put a guy on the moon. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everyone has to be happy. Everyone has to get what they want. No one has, we don't want to ruffle anyone's feathers. This is not peaceful times. We're dealing with a war. And in the war, there's a lot at stake. The whole country can go down the tubes. The economy can go into a global depression. There can be more deaths in the big picture of things which are not on the books. There's death through suicide, death through people who are not getting medical attention that they need. And these things are not obvious. We're fighting a war, and in a war, I'm going to make tough decisions that are going to cause harm. But that's what you do in war. And Bezdin, when you have a Bezdin, that's what Bezdin does. This collateral damage. There are people in the Bezdin that don't like the decision. You have a Bezdin majority. The majority says we have to make a decision. We can't linger. We can't just show indecisiveness. Leadership demands clear decisions now. And clear decisions now will ruffle people's feathers. They're not happy with those decisions. Too bad. There are rules. The rules are take a vote. You take a vote, there's a majority. The majority says this is the policy. That's the policy. This is our decision. And we go from here with this decision. Oh, but there are some members of the board of trustees that don't like that decision. Too bad for you. We can't make you happy today. It's too bad for you. But if you accept it to be a trustee on the board, with that comes the acknowledgement that when we will make decisions and you will not approve of those decisions, if you are outnumbered, it is your duty to accept the majority opinion and to support the majority opinion. If you're not willing to realize that, then don't become a member of the board. Anytime you have an organization which you invite a person to join a board of trustees where decisions are going to be made, you have to sit down with these people and say to them, there's going to come a time in the future when we're going to take a vote and you're not going to like, you're going to disagree. You're going to disagree with every molecule of your existence. You will disagree. If you are not at this moment in time willing to acknowledge that that will happen, and yet you will say, if the majority says, disagrees with me, I accept, and I will be with you. I will support the decision of the majority. Then don't join. Who's asking you? Being a member of a Bezdin brings with it the duty and the obligation to acknowledge that you may be a minority. And yet, you still accept that if I'm a minority, I will work with myself and go to my shrink and take my medicine to make sure that I'm willing to accept the decision of the majority. Ad kedei kach, I'll even give $1 million to implement the decision of the majority to make sure that it's successful. That's what it means to be a member of Sanhedrin. That's what it means to accept what it says in the Torah, acharei rabim lehatois. The Tumim says it all. It's not a piece of meat. You're not a piece of meat here. Three pieces of meat. Acharei rabim lehatois is your duty. And it's very, very sad that this speech is not given to people who join organizations where they're going to be given the ability to make decisions. Okay, you have over here, even if you're president of the United States, you sit down with your cabinet. I want to give you grosser covet. I want to make you the Secretary of Defense. But I'm telling you, we'll have a, you have to have a system that's fair. Okay, you have to be, I don't know if Trump is fair. Maybe Trump says, I don't care what anyone here says, whatever I want. If that's the way it is, I don't know. I don't know how it works. But if there is a fair system in place where you have a cabinet and you tell, listen, we have a cabinet. I'm never going to decide on my own. Even though I'm the president, I'm telling you, give me my word, we're going to vote. You want to join the cabinet? You want to join the cabinet? You only can join my cabinet on one condition. You're going to have a vote. We're going to have 10 people in this cabinet. We're going to have a vote. If 6 people agree, you cannot go on national television and tell everyone that you disagree. That's not the way it works. Then don't join my cabinet. I know you disagree, but we're going to have a democratic system here. We're going to have 10 votes. We're going to have 10 votes. 10 votes. If 6 of the votes are, we're going to do something, keep your mouth shut. Keep your mouth shut. If you don't want to keep your mouth shut, then don't, then right now, I don't want you to ever be, have that, make, be part of that group. That is what it says in the Tumim, what it means to be part of a Beis Din, to be part of a board of trustees or any type of group. And it's so sad. It is so sad that people violate this rule every single day in every type of organization, especially it's a chil Hashem amongst us, amongst the Jews, that we can't get this straight because we know a lot better, especially we have the Tumim that teaches us this. And it's just a recipe for disaster. Okay, enough said. We'll take a break.
That's what was Rabban Gamliel said to Rabbi Yeshua. You come to me with Makel Chal. But
you have to be mivat
because that's
exactly
if you like it or not. You come to me with your staff.
Your wallet, yeah.
But that was after the halacha. That's not a right example. It's not a. The best example is with Abraham Lincoln had a cabinet meeting, and everyone disagreed with him, and he says 11 nays, 1 yay. The yays win. That's it. That's a cabinet.
Yeah.
Take a short